We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Big Ten canceled its fall football season on August 11th, 2020. And reversed course just 5 weeks later.
They were in an indefensible position. They were losing players. Their reputation was taking an absolute beating. So they came to the conclusion, they claim unanimously, that they are now back.
However pure the intentions, this move created a firestorm. In part one, we took a look back at how the Big Ten fumbled its most important decision and eventually recovered.
Today on Big Noon Kickoff. Urban tells us what it means to have the Big Ten back.
Now, we look ahead. What, if anything, did college football learn? And can it be better because of it? From the Solid Verbal, this is a special production. So, now what? What did we learn, Dan? What did we learn after the 2020 season? Any thoughts?
Yeah, a number of thoughts. That there was an incredibly strong will from a lot of people to have a season and to, in good faith, enact precautions that would lead us as a college football community to watching and participating in a college football season that ultimately... College football is as we talked about on part one, an even more splintered sport in a way that is unlike any other major sport that we had ever anticipated. And we already knew it was. And just that it was, God, what did we learn? that we never, as a community of college football fans, want to deal with a pandemic for one, pandemic reasons, and two, having to argue about things that very few of us actually know about reasons.
David Jones was a little bit more pessimistic.
We still don't have NIL, man. Are you kidding? They don't even see what's happening. They don't even see what's out there and what's going to happen. It's inevitable. No, they haven't learned a damn thing.
So he's talking about the NCAA. He's talking about college football
right, as
a whole, maybe not from the perspective of fans, but I think it's a valid point. And I think we need to unpack it if we're really, truly going to dissect what we learned from the 2020 odd COVID season. One of the main topics that keeps coming up in all the discussions that we've had is this lack of leadership, right? The lack of leadership. Here's Nicole.
We always knew that college sports were super decentralized and that decisions were made on a campus level, conference level. But it was really, really apparent how little leadership there was from the NCAA and that there was a lot of decision making that wasn't consistent across the board, wasn't coherent, wasn't coordinated. And I think that means whatever the next major crisis is, you're still going to be really unprepared for it, especially if it's something that you do need the best decision making, the best processes, looking back on last year, would have been the same for everyone, right? And not having individual decisions, and not having people essentially saying like, my medical group is better than yours, or yours is overreacting and mine isn't. Doctors have second opinions, third opinions all the time. It would have been a lot better for the sport and for athletes and coaches and everyone to have uniform rules and uniform policies. And that didn't happen. And so that part isn't fixed and isn't going to be fixed.
So though we focus most of part one on the awkward decision-making of the conferences, namely the Big Ten, it all does come back to the NCAA, doesn't it? It all comes back to the fact that the NCAA back in 2015 gave the Power Five a little bit more autonomy. They wanted to be part of football. They didn't necessarily want to govern, at least to the extent that Nicole describes how the Power Five goes about its business. And it took, I think, an episode like this, as we've seen with the pandemic, to really highlight some of the inefficiencies of that. Going it alone and not having, as David told me, a grand poobah of college football who could help with oversight and help issue protocols and common rules all throughout the sport. This is a circumstance in which that really came to light.
Definitely.
Another topic on that same point.
Yeah, I think we learned that it is a lot more of a minefield than we thought. I think in most years, we know that they're in meetings, that they care about all these sports and championships and, you know, fines and compliance and various things, right? And you're trying to get, you know, coaches to be civil with each other, athletic directors to get along, you know, all of those things. But I don't think anyone really ever thought too much about the meetings that they were having with their chancellors and presidents all the time, as we did during this process, because all of the decisions, like to when you start a season, like to how long a season is going to be and how the format's going to be, have to be made at that level. So we're so used to thinking about athletic directors controlling how college football works. But these decisions had to be made at such a high level. And one thing that I think was really missing from the Big Ten conversation is that Kevin Warren could not have made those decisions by himself. And a lot of the blame was falling on him squarely because the presidents and chancellors didn't address it, didn't talk to anyone. They didn't, you know, everyone tried to FOIA their emails. They were using that separate portal, right? Like there was not really the accountability for the people who actually voted and who actually did something until that lawsuit from the Nebraska players got the final vote.
So the lawsuit that she's referring to was one from Nebraska players trying to figure out exactly what went on, because as we said in part one, there was just so much consternation over the process. Who decided that there was not going to be a season? We didn't find out until that FOIA request, in fact, that there were three schools within the Big Ten who decided they wanted to play, while the other ones decided that they would vote to suspend the season. I guess my lingering question after hearing all this is whether or not it's going to make the sport any better. And, you know, I'd like to be here on this show talking about how we learned so much from this and how come the 2021 season, we're all going to be better for it. I'd like for there to be a bright side that we can point to. Hopefully the bright side is that people aren't sick, that we don't have all these protocols in place, that we don't need the protocols in place because the situation is better. But I kind of feel like the politics here of conference decision-making, of the real power brokers kind of operating in separate silos, is not something that's going to go away. We can tell ourselves that because there was so much of a firestorm around the circumstance that they're going to find a better way to do it in another time of crisis. I just don't know if I honestly believe that.
No, and it comes back to the actual layout of the sport and the fact that these aren't sports organizations. These are universities with chancellors and presidents and deans and students and faculty and athletic directors and coaches and other sports and Title IX considerations. And this isn't anything that the Denver Nuggets have to deal with. It's nothing that the Carolina Panthers have to deal with. The players are unionized in other sports of this size, of college football size. College football kept growing, and yet the power structure remained so separate and disjointed that we are always going to have this problem until something is addressed, which is why you have Nebraska players speaking out and Ryan Day speaking out and Bob Bowlesby speaking out and there being no uniform strategy across the sport, because the sport was never brought together. It's a series of essentially mini fiefdoms trying to come together and organize to play football. But there are a lot of people in each of these fiefdoms. So it became more and more apparent and confusing by the day as to how we're going to actually corral everybody. And you, and in a normal year, that's sort of a feature of the sport, not a bug, because there's chaos. It's wild and there are upsets and every stadium is different and there's different time zones involved and there's traditions that are just crazy different across the sport. But in a time when it would behoove the sport to have everybody on the same page, we're talking about a book of pages, not a single page at all.
One of the questions you asked Nicole about that I thought was so interesting, could an output of the 2020 season be that the Power Five decides once and for all, it's going to break apart from the NCAA? It's going to start its own super league of sorts, and it's just not going to deal with the NCAA anymore. And she brought up a really good point. It's not that they don't want to. It's that they don't want to leave the money on the table from the NCAA basketball tournament. There's like $1 billion tied up in the basketball tournament. Mm-hmm. To walk away from that money would be foolish. And so until something changes with the economics, at least on the basketball side, it does not seem likely that that's a realistic possibility, despite the fact that I feel like we talk about it every single summer.
Right. You're almost, what are you, doubling, tripling, something crazy, the number of teams that are eligible for the NCAA tournament. So you're going from having to convince, I forget the number of Power Five schools in Notre Dame or FBS schools, which is about 130. Power Five schools in Notre Dame is about, what, 64, 65, something in that range. So that's difficult enough to lay out something new. And then you're doubling or tripling that number to go to 300 and something, it becomes, I mean, it's herding cats,
right?
But all of the cats are very strongly willed and running in different directions. So no, Nicole's point is that seems like the one that's the most correct.
The general takeaway here from both David and Nicole was that nobody's learned much of anything, and that's fine. There are some things though that college football learned along with the rest of us.
I think that, like many companies and businesses, the ability to just hop on a Zoom meeting and say that that is, you know, the highest level of whatever the organization is and that you can make decisions that way and don't have to have in-person meetings. Like, I think that is something that these conferences will take from that, right? Like, they can convene an emergency meeting via mm-hmm. Zoom. They can make big decisions if they need to, not in person and not at their annual meetings or whatever, you know, past processes. I think that people have understood the value of having a medical advisory group. I think that was like one of the first steps everybody made. I would imagine that some sort of on-call advisory group is a great idea, like something to take out of this, right? You know, for whatever the medical issue is. And then you could add specialists. And I think deferring to them and trying to understand issues that we didn't know anything about, like I was thinking about, like, I didn't have immunologists in my address book a year ago, yeah. Right? Like, everyone has gotten more well-versed in it because you find your expert.
To summarize, they learned to use Zoom, Dan.
I'm pretty sure the playoff committee still traveled and met in person because
Bill Hancock, still unconvinced that Zoom can be a thing.
This miniseries brought to you by Zoom. No, not at all.
The final point that we got from our two-person panel, maybe the most obvious of all, from our friend David Jones.
College football, it needs fans. I did the Indiana game in Bloomington and flew out there, and I'm looking around at this place and I'm like, this is so stupid. It's just stupid.
Stupid without fans. So we didn't go to any games this year.
No.
Fans were in some stadiums, not in others. What was the viewing experience like? Did it affect the product for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it affected the product not as much when I would watch a game that I remember Boston College didn't have fans, right? They were one of the schools that had the cardboard cutouts and they played in empty stadiums for their home games. It didn't do too much for me. I know ESPN and Fox piped in some sound. It was when there were stadiums and conferences that, I don't know if they were mic'd up for TV a certain way or that they had such a crazy number of people relative to other schools who didn't. But I remember, and I've talked about this before on the show, the Iowa State-Oklahoma game,
right,
which was a tight game at the very end, a back and forth game, big plays, big swings, and the crowd was into it. And it shocked me. It shocked me to have that little island of an experience, having the energy in the stadium be transferred to my living room, because by that point I had seen so many games without it that I had sort of gotten used to it, that it kind of felt like a baseball game of a bad team in late August or something like that, that I'd gotten used to like just the murmury crowd sounds. And then when it was very apparent that there was energy in a stadium, it really like made me sit up on my couch.
Yeah. And one of the other things that we'll get into was the broadcasting component of the 2020 season, which was different. Certainly the fans not being there and not being as present was very much a factor for those of us who were watching at home. It certainly was not a normal season by any stretch of the imagination. I think at first it didn't bother me. At first, going into the season, thinking, well, we're going to have games. Fans won't be there. What difference does it make? I think David is right. College football, maybe more so than any other sport, to not have that fan presence, it really does make a mark. It is something that you notice even when you're watching from home. It's part of the environment that you just come to expect when you flip on a game on a Saturday. And it felt like a pretty big void turning on CBS, turning on ABC, and not having that fandom there to the fullest extent.
Yeah, it's cliche at this point, but major sports are what they are because of environment. And even sports where you're not allowed to, you know, it's hushed tones at, you know, Augusta National or the US Open and tennis, whatever, that there is something about the environment of people watching and knowing that the players feel the pressure of all of those eyes or all of that sound when they're in the red zone or trying to mount a goal line stand and they have the weight of the student section behind them. And you know that there are a bunch of Tennessee fans or USC fans or Texas Tech fans that are drunk out of their minds for a noon kickoff. Without that, it's not what we want, right? It's not what we're used to. It's not what we want. It's not what we consider to be the actual appeal of the sport, which once again is the culture of college football. It's not the football. The football is the center part of it, but it's what the football brings out in us is why we've been doing this show for years. It's why we stay up until 2 a.m. watching a Washington State Cal game. It's why we, you know, we'll watch a ridiculous NC State Virginia Tech game on a Thursday night with almost no stakes, because there is something that draws us in about the experience of college football, not just whatever happens between, you know, the sidelines and the end zones.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You know what I think I learned above all else? There's no way to prepare for a pandemic, not in the sports world.
No.
I almost can't blame guys like Kevin Warren for trying to do the right thing. Maybe it wasn't the smoothest of rollouts, but
it was the worst year to be a first year commissioner, without a doubt, in the last, 100 years?
Yeah.
The worst.
It was a really awkward circumstance, any way you try to play it. And so I feel for him genuinely that he was put in that situation. I feel for a lot of these conference commissioners and administrators around college football. They were all put in a very, very difficult situation. At times, it seemed obvious that they shouldn't play. Other people would argue that, well, they should have all along. There are many, many different viewpoints on the matter, but no doubt it was a very tough spot to be in for all of those individuals. I don't know if it's the kind of thing that you could write a playbook on moving forward, because every circumstance is going to be different. God forbid this should happen again, or something like it should right. happen again. I just don't know if there's anything that you can do to really prepare yourself and come out of this saying, this is something that we learned. There are other aspects of the sport that we're going to try to unpack here over the next couple of weeks. Broadcasting, I think we learned a lot about broadcasting, the way that coaches manage teams, the way that they recruit to those teams. I think we learned a lot about how that can be done in times of crisis, and maybe how it can be done more efficiently moving forward. But at least as it stands with respect to conference decision-making, to the power brokers in the sport of college football, the money men that really drive this thing forward, I think we're right back where we started.
I don't know what to think about what the sport is going to look like moving forward, but in terms of crisis acting and decision-making and getting ducks in a row, there's no reason to believe it'll go any smoother. There's reason to believe that certain mistakes won't be remade, but, you know, going into January, February, nobody anticipated, even if they knew about what was happening with the pandemic and people getting sick in Asia, nobody was prepared to say, I need to start making decisions for thousands upon thousands of people under 22 or whatever, and that this is going to affect my legacy. This is going to affect how we as a sport operate. There was nobody who really could have possibly imagined. And so what's the next big world event that affects sports? I honestly don't know. I have no idea if it's gonna be a pandemic. I have no idea if it's gonna be war. I have no idea, but I do have a pretty good concept that college football, which is one of the least important elements of all of this, is probably going to do a poor job of communicating with each other about what the best steps are going to be.
As we move forward now, the next question is, what does college football look like this fall? Do we have a normal season? Do we have stadiums at full capacity? I talked to David about that. I said, what's Beaver Stadium look like come September? His estimate, and no one knows for sure, was 70%. We'll have 70% of Beaver Stadium full. It'll be a much more normal college football atmosphere on game day. It may not still get to 100%, but 70%, given where we came from, is going to feel much more like we're used to.
Yeah, obviously, the number of people who have been vaccinated, the number of people who have had COVID-19 and are, I guess, not fearful of getting it again. You know, I can't speak for any. I have not had COVID-19. I have been vaccinated. I do feel a certain amount of excitement about doing things in large groups in public once again, be it shows, concerts, you know, stand-up comedy, and live sporting events. I am excited to get back to a live sporting event. Now, I understand that a lot of people are going to be still, even if they're eating out at a local Chinese restaurant or Mexican restaurant or whatever, they're still going to be a little bit trepidatious about, that's a good word, right, Ty?
It's not bad.
I think that's pretty good. About going back and doing all things that, you know, really living it up at a college football game involved, tailgating, you know, going to the game, hanging out, going to a you know, traveling to a town and going out to the bars the night before or whatever. There's going to be a number of people who are still wait and see in that regard. But I think overwhelmingly, especially as we enter into the summer and, you know, more and more events open up and you see people at concerts and things, if people are feeling less and less worried about going back to whatever their normal life was before, I think by the end of the season, I think people are going to be especially excited to be at these games. I think there's going to be a giant burden off a lot of people's shoulder. That's the way I view things. I think Dave is right. It's not going to be feel fully 100% back to normal, whatever that is. But I think it overwhelmingly is going to be a familiar college football universe by late October, by about Halloween.
I think in some sense it'll be a tale of two cities. And this is another point that he made to me in our interview, which people can see in its entirety out at verballers.com, as they can with your interview with Nicole. There are kind of two classes of fans that may emerge now on the hopefully backside of this pandemic. First off, you're going to have people who just don't want to be in groups anymore. People who have grown comfortable being at home, working at home. They may feel some sense of anxiety going out there and being amongst the people, being among 100,000 others watching a college football game. I think that point of view is understandable. It may not be guided by science at this point if you've got the shots and
right.
Who knows, but everyone's entitled to their own opinion on the matter. The second group, I think, could be just wildly repressed and they just are dying to get out there and revel in whatever they can, be it college football or concerts or just going to the local neighborhood bar.
Solid verbal live shows. Sure.
Of course. I am very curious to see which of those two sides wins out. My expectation is that it's going to be the latter. And we're going to see a lot of people out there. Desire for tickets, demand for tickets could be at a very interesting point come September when the season's about ready to start. I think that there will be no shortage of college football fans who want to get out there and be in the stadium, be in the parking lot to tailgate with family and friends. That is as much a part of college football and the fabric that we know of college football as anything. I would expect that, again, now that we've hopefully gotten to a point where it's safer to do these activities, people aren't going to be at all gun shy about doing it. They're going to be out there doing what they've always done and loved.
I live literally 5 minutes from a Power 5 football stadium. I am going to try everything I can to go to a game.
Thanks again for listening to our special production, So Now What? Don't forget, you can listen to full interviews with Nicole and David over on our Patreon at verballers.com. Join us next week for a different topic, but the same obvious question. So, now what?